Groovies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is time for Movies and Booze. Linda Coogan, Brian Lloyd and Serena Bellissimo. Join us once again. Good afternoon to you all. Ooh, that's a fancy bottle.
I know. Yeah,
that's tell us what they are.
Okay, so they are for celebrating International Women's Day on Sunday. Today's Friday, but we're pretending it's International Women's Day. And these are made by two female fabulous winemakers. So they're both Spanish, just by chance. And the first one is an Albarino from Rías Baixas. And the second one is a Rioja, not a Rioja, not a Rioja.
Yeah.
A Rioja.
A Rioja.
Yeah.
A Rioja.
It's like, you said that.
Yeah. If you went into an office, it's just kind of like, oh. They go, what?
Yeah, you're I know.
You're like, clear your throat into a piece of tissue there.
But the first Albarino Mar de Frade is a fabulous one, and the bottle is beautiful. I know everybody can see it listening on the radio.
Of course, but, it's blue. Yeah,
it is blue, and I actually need to check. You can recycle it, but I always forget. I have to check which recycling bin the blue glass goes into. Yeah. I know it's cool, isn't it? So it's really long, and the Magnum bottle, it comes in a double bottle as well. A Magnum is nearly the size of me. I was showing Serena, it's nearly the size of me. It's so long, but it's cool. And it's real fresh, crisp. We're going to taste it, and it is fabulous. But amazing two female winemakers.
Okay, looking forward to that. So, Brian, Jesse Buckley and Terrible Film Shop.
Yes. Wow, how terrible is this film? Yeah, The Bride! Exclamation point. This film is just a mess of a thing. It's a reimagining of the story of The Bride of Frankenstein. Christian Bale plays Frankenstein, or Frank, as he's called in this. Jesse Buckley plays the Bride of Frankenstein, who is this 30s Chicagoland flapper mobster mall who dies and is then brought back to life by Annette Bening, and they go off on this Bonnie and Clyde adventure across America in the 30s. All sounds great on paper. I mean, great cast. Like, you have Penelope Cruz, Peter Sarsgaard, Jake Gyllenhaal is in there, Annette Bening, as I said, Christian Bale and Jesse Buckley. But this is just
it's got mixed reviews.
Very mixed. I mean, this is the thing. I do think that your mileage will vary based on how you are able to handle somebody shifting mid-scene from a Victorian English accent to a broad Chicago accent. Literally, like, split second. It's very, very hard to follow. And gets
Is that deliberate? Or?
Yeah, because the whole thing is that the character that Jesse Buckley plays, and it's never really fully explained, she's either possessed by Mary Shelley, or she is a schizophrenic who believes Mary Shelley is inside of her head. And then she talks to herself in black and white. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. And Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man. Now, I looked it up. It's literally going to be on Netflix a fortnight from today.
Yeah, the 20th of March. Yeah, but they're going into cinemas. Why bother?
Why? Yeah.
I mean, it's a feature-length film. They've got Barry Keoghan in there. It looks lovely on a big screen. I'll say that. But yeah, I mean, if you're not arsed, just wait until it's on Netflix. Like,
okay.
I mean, I'm not going to... Look, it's a beautiful... Look,
that's,
you know what?
That's one for the poster. If you're not arsed...
I mean, look, you know what? It's a beautiful day. The sun is shining. Maybe you don't want to spend it in a cinema. You know, take the weekend. Maybe wait until it's on Netflix. I don't know. I don't know. You would have to be really, really into Peaky Blinders, I think, to fork out the 15, 20 quid to go see this in a cinema.
Yeah.
I have to be honest about it. I mean, I know I'm kind of preempting my review. Because there are those lads, the amount of weddings I have gone to.
No, you see, the thing is, women love Peaky Blinders. Loads of women love Peaky Blinders. I don't know if it's a lot of Peaky Blinders or they just like him.
But, I think they like Killy Murphy in a suit.
Yeah.
But you do see, like, I've gone, the amount of weddings I've gone to where you see them lads turning up in those really itchy looking wool suits with the stupid hats, thinking they look class. Do you know what I mean? And you'd see them in Punchestown as well, wouldn't you? Yeah, exactly. And they look like idiots. Like, and they've got that stupid haircut that no one else can pull off except Cillian Murphy. Like,
yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. Tell us how you really
yeah.
feel.
Yeah.
I see them all the time. It's like,
he hasn't even reviewed the film yet and he's insulted about a quarter of the listening audience.
Sorry.
Well done, Brian. Stella said, now this is a lovely story. It's nice to do actually a positive story. The Stella Cinema in Rathmines, from which we have done outside broadcast many times, has been named as number two in the world.
Yeah, it has. And now I'm kicking myself for not seeing what was named number one.
I had to look it up. I knew you wouldn't. It was the Chinese Theatre in LA.
Hold on. I knew you wouldn't do it.
Actually, the Chinese Theatre in LA is number one, which I think is a cheat because that's not like. That's a Hollywood.
It's an institution. Like, exactly. It is. The TCL,
so that's not fair. It's
so
not
really,
a proper,
we're number one.
We're really number one. Yeah, and, absolutely.
And
yeah.
It is an extraordinary.
Gorgeous.
And look, what I do know is that it beat out iconic cinemas in Paris, London, and LA. Like, even though the Chinese theatre did beat it out, it was opened in 1923, and then it was shut for a very long time, and then it was restored. And
it used to be called a smeller.
Oh no! It was
It
was manky.
Really?
Like rats. Rats would run underneath the underneath the chairs.
Oh, no, I know. Your feet would stick to the carpet.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know,
if you didn't move quickly enough.
Yeah.
So could you imagine if Time Out knew that? Then it would definitely have been the Chinese.
And we don't know.
Yeah.
But it is beautiful. It basically made the list because it has been carefully restored. It's got beautiful Art Deco interiors. There's the gorgeous seating. Like every time I go in there, I have to admit, it is, you know, when you go to the cinema, it's an experience. You are going to this for experience cinema.
Yeah,
I do feel like I'm going into the 1920s, like the golden age of cinema.
It's the movie palaces. It's the old movie palaces.
Yeah.
Like the Everyman Theatre down in Cork has that as well, the beautiful colonnade around the screen and stuff. Lighthouse got in there as well. Lighthouse was in the list as well. I think that was like a 20, I think, or 25 or something.
Okay,
like that.
Well,
that's
fair.
Nice to see as well.
Good to see it. Yeah. No, the Stella is gorgeous. Yeah.
It is gorgeous. So it's great to see. And Carl Geraghty, the head of Stella Cinemas, said that was a tremendous honour for Stella and everyone who contributed the story. The aim has always been to celebrate cinema as something truly special, an experience that brings people together in a beautiful setting to share the magic of film. And I think that is what happens at the Stella.
Yeah, and The Bear is ending with season 5, which I think is good.
Yeah.
Not that you want to, but you want things to come to a definitive end rather than flogging it to death.
Probably should have ended in season 3.
Maybe.
Although, no, but I think it ran its course. I did, like, last season, though, had it ended in season 3, we wouldn't have gotten that extraordinary wedding episode, which I think is one of my all-time favourite episodes of TV. Yeah. So, but in typical fashion, like, we don't know. It hasn't been confirmed. Jamie Lee Curtis basically announced it on her Instagram. She put up a photo of herself and of Natalie, who's her youngest daughter, and she said, "Finish strong, surrounded by an extraordinary crew and group of writers and producers and scene partners on the show that Chris Storer created, completing the story of this extraordinary family that we have all fallen in love with, and I got to finish it out with my baby Bizarro Bear." I want to know what happened after she posted that. Like, what phone call did she get?
Well, she probably doesn't care.
No, she doesn't. Right. That's
no,
what,
yeah. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
So, yes, okay. So it
well,
will
that's
finish.
Good. So they've finished filming it, that seemed to
they
be.
They have. Right. Well, according to Jamie Lee Curtis, everything's been wrapped and it is coming later on this year. But I think, can I give a spoiler? Like, season 4 was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Like, I think it had to come to an end given that we saw Carmi do. Carmi did in season 4, that last episode, it made out that it had come to end. It probably would have ended perfectly with that. But I suppose we all want to know, will it go on? So let's do season 5 and then let's say goodbye.
Well, actually, at the end of season 4, there was a little bit of, is that the end of it now? I wasn't quite sure.
They probably filmed it in that way just in case it was the end of it. So,
industry is like that as well. Like, we started watching Industry and like each season, they really just do kind of bring it straight to an end.
Yeah.
And then they pick up like 6 months later. So like they've given themselves enough kind of breathing room, I think, that if it ends there, fine, they have an ending for it. But if they continue on, they can continue on with it. Like,
yeah.
It's clever writing. Like, it's very good writing. You don't see that enough anymore, to be honest.
There was only one Bride of Frankenstein, Madeleine Kahn.
Yeah, that's right. From, what do you call it? From Young Frankenstein.
Yeah. Brian, you don't pronounce the GH in Kyogen.
You don't?
So how do you pronounce it?
Kyogen?
No, I thought
it was Keoghan.
Keoghan.
Well, you don't look at me.
No.
Keoghan.
Keoghan.
Keoghan, I would say.
Keoghan. All right, okay.
All right. Like Keoghan.
saying his name all wrong then. Good to hear the stupid haircuts mentioned. How about a feature on the fade haircut? How is it possible that such an abomination is so popular in this country? In the words of my local hairdressers, who refuses to do it, it looks equally dreadful on everyone. Says Gary.
Wait, you have to have a very specific head for
strong opinions there.
Wait for the mullet. The mullet's come back. The structured mullet is actually quite, I can't believe I'm saying this. It's actually quite nice, but so I'm expecting to see that on the streets over the summer.
No, but isn't there your man who played Frankenstein in the other Frankenstein?
Jacob Elordi.
Jacob Elordi has this kind of variety of, it's kind of looks like, it's a kind of flighty, fluffy kind of a mullet. It's like not very mullety. Lettuce hair,
It's structured and it's not like a typical Australian mullet.
It's not full
mullet,
Billy Ray Cyrus like.
Yeah, like party up the top. No, what do they call
business
it?
Business at the front, business party at the back.
At least we're not getting that back.
No, thank God. See them though. I've been out.
In Australia?
No, here.
No, down the country there's a kind of a, it's not really, I don't know if they call it a mullet or is there an official name.
There's an element of irony to it.
It's very popular.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe not.
Maybe they think there is. And blue glass goes in the brown bottle bin.
I just googled it and it said the green.
No, well, they say especially if it's raining. we often make arbitrary decisions about that. This is an extraordinary story about Christina Applegate and Anchorman.
Yep, and you wouldn't be surprised to hear, especially as we come up to International Women's Day, that Christina Applegate was offered pittance to appear in Anchorman. And good on her. She turned around and said, do you know what? Nah, this offer, it's a little offensive. I'm going to say no. But Will Ferrell and Adam McKay really wanted her to be a part of it. So they chipped in some of their salary. And then she went, now, I'm sure she didn't come up to par with what everyone else was earning, but they brought it up high enough that she went, this is worth it. And she is thrilled that she said yes, but good on her for saying no when they weren't willing to pay her what she was worth.
And she wasn't a nobody at the time.
No.
She had done quite a bit. I mean,
married with children.
Yeah. And then she'd done other film roles as well. And like we forget Christina Applegate was massive at this time and still they were willing to offer her, as she said, an offensive amount of money.
And she was just as good. I mean, she was just as funny in that film as Will Ferrell. Like,
absolutely.
Very much her equal. Like,
and I'm going to get political for a sec, but this is why we need to talk about money as well. Because if we talk about money, people then know how badly or how well you're being paid and we can all go and fight for each other's.
Yes, comrades. Yeah. Together.
Yes. Yeah. No, I'm paid. You're all on your own, girls. I'm drawing up my old white man drawbridge behind me. Thank you very much. Lads, mullet is back all over the country the last couple of years. I'm just reading that out in the accent I think it was written in.
And I can hear the accent in the text. It is, in fairness. Like, I've seen mullets out and about.
Everywhere.
Really?
Ironic and unironic.
Old-fashioned or old-fashioned. Jacob Elordi?
And oddly enough,
they're more kind of shaved at the side now.
I like that one.
And it seems to be big in the rugby community. I've seen a lot of rugby dudes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're big into it, like.
Yeah, I often wonder that about rugby players. They have all these hairstyles.
Crazy haircuts,
you're just asking for your hair to be pulled.
I know. You would think just shave it all off. Give them nothing to hold on to.
That's what I would have thought.
They grab your ears then.
Sinead wants to know, why is the Stella called the Stella? What is the story behind it?
Oh, I heard this.
How do you know this?
No, because I was there for the opening. I remember. No. It was something like the owner of the cinema, the original owner of the cinema, named it after his wife, I think, or something like that.
Okay.
It was named after somebody. I remember Carl, the manager of the thing, telling me that. It was named after, I think, it was either the wife or the daughter or something like that. It was named after a woman. That's what I do know.
Okay, fair enough. Right, let's tell us about our first wine of the day, Linda.
I will indeed. I'm still trying to find out if it's green or brown.
Green.
It said green there when I googled it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it is...
Isn't brown for like food waste though?
No, brown glass.
Oh, right.
All right.
Oh, no. God, sorry,
put your blue glass into the compost.
He knows where the name Stella came from, but you know...
Ask me anything on glass, I'm raw. Can't help you.
Oh, stop. Okay, so this is called Marta Frade, an Albarino from Rías Baixas in Galicia, north, southeast, west of Spain.
Did you have to count that
out? No, I had to go north, south, east, west. Draw it on a map. And it's made by Paula Fandino. Okay. Okay. And she's fabulous. Yeah. And she was the first one who created the first 100% sparkling Albarino, which is a big deal. So they made it the same way they make champagne. So it's fully bubbles and all the rest. And it's fabulous. Really, really nice. But this is, have a little taste and see what you think. So Paola is like, she's just, women are very much known in Galicia region for getting involved in the wine industry. And the men went out to the sea to catch the fish, which obviously this goes very well with.
Yeah.
What do you think? Stick your nose in.
Oh yeah, it's lovely.
So
yeah,
this, like, there's little birds, little seagulls on the bottle, as you can see and hear, listeners. And see the little label here, it's a little ship. So when the wine is perfect temperature to actually drink nice and chilled between 8 and 9 degrees, the little boat arrives on the label.
That's very clever. Mm.
And when it's too warm, it disappears. So yeah. Like Coors, you know, the cans.
I was going to say, that's what I... Yeah.
Can it be too cold?
Well, yeah, you can, because then you lose all the flavour of it. So, you know, so it's just right. Goldilocks. But this has got gorgeous citrus flavours.
Oh, look at the little thing. Yeah, I can see it.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
But this is a fabulous wine. So again, women are really, really heavily involved in the wine industry in Galicia, in northern Spain. And seafood, shellfish, your salad, simple, daytime, gorgeous. And it's such a cool, I know it's a bottle, like a bottle shape, but it's such a standout bottle.
Yeah,
it doesn't sit, it doesn't sit on normal shelves, so it usually will be top shelf.
It's a bit taller.
It is a bit taller, so it mightn't even fit in a normal fridge, but it is fab. I had to lie it down in the fridge because I had no shelf space for it. But it's just a really, really fresh, vibrant, and there's a bit of salinity. So that's like a salty note that you get. And that's from the sea breeze coming in there as well. So I adore this. I love Albarino, and fair play to Paola. Yay.
Good woman, Paola. Right, so, Brian, should we start the Jesse Buckley backlash?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's coming up after the break.
What are you doing? Go home! You do not want to get caught up with me. People love a monster. There is going to be a mob. Really? I've been through this before. It is terrible. Go. Get out of here. Go home.
I don't know where I live.
That is The Bride. It's in cinemas from today. Should be, now you've already told us this, written and directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal. Is she kind of trying to do an Emerald Fennel?
Correcto mundo. That's exactly what's going on here. No, seriously, Barbie has a lot to answer for in that they're taking these. I saw that. I will explain. Easy Tiger.
Yeah, it's International Women's Day.
Nearly. I know. You know. I can feel
sliding off Barbie.
Yeah. Yeah. I can feel
the looks. You can feel the looks.
What I mean is that it has become this thing now where they're taking kind of these sacred cows, if you like, and are like chopping them up and like, we're going to do this with it. And what? I don't know.
He's calling Barbie a cow now. No! Can you stop, man, with your misogyny?
Go.
Okay, sorry, go on.
We'll have you, Bride.
They're taking these...
classic texts.
Yes, correct. There we go. I should have used the different cows. Jesus. Yeah. Anyways, but they're taking these like sacred texts and chopping them up and being like, you know, we're going to do something really, really different with it or whatever. And obviously, you know, Bride of Frankenstein is, you know, a foundational text in, you know, horror and women in horror and all the rest of it. But the problem with this is that by taking these sacred texts, you have to be really, really smart with it. And Barbie, it was an incredibly smart film. Like, I mean, it was so, so good. And then Wuthering Heights was not so good. And then this is even worse, because what you have here is essentially 10 different ideas. Every actor in it has just been let off the leash and just been like, do whatever you feel is right in this scene. Just go nuts.
Yeah.
And there is no kind of shade to it. There is no subtlety to it. It is just firing on all cylinders. And it gets really annoying really, really quickly. Because, like, you know, again, like I'm saying, like, you know, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, it is a text that is redone over and over again. And, you know, you can make fun of it, you can engage with it. And that's what they tried to do in this. They tried to get to the idea of, like, you know, the Bride of Frankenstein, we never knew her first name. She never really had any identity. She was only kind of a reflection of Frankenstein. And even then, it was very much, you know, she was made to serve him and serve Dr. Frankenstein and stuff. Why does she not get any kind of agency? And Maggie Gyllenhaal tries to give her some sort of agency in this. But by doing that, then it then feeds into another, I would argue, misogynistic trope, which is that, oh, she's the crazy lady. She's the crazy lady. And like, yes, she's speaking the truth. Yes, she is, you know, Cassandra and all the rest of it. No one listens to her. But that still doesn't really help, you know, that kind of way. Jessie Buckley, I think, is a fantastic actor. She is going to win Best Actress. She is absolutely deserves to win it. Hamnet is an incredible film. That being said, she is absolutely terrible in this. I mean, she is absolutely awful in this.
Okay.
She is so bad. Every choice she makes is the wrong one. And I think, you know, I think Christian Bale has something to do with it as well, because Christian Bale loves a stupid accent. He loves a silly voice.
Yeah.
He loves to just throw himself into a role and really kind of get weird with it. There was a film a couple of years back, if you remember, called Amsterdam that nobody saw. And he was terrible in it, and he just doesn't seem to have that kind of, I don't know, control over himself anymore. He just seems to always go for the biggest possible thing. And I think Jessie Buckley got wrapped up in that as well. Because, again, the thing I would say about Jessie Buckley is that, like, I think as a performer, she is able to, you know, pitch herself, you know, high and low and, you know, really kind of find the midpoints in it. Like, you know, you think of something like Wild Rose, the film that, like, kind of launched her and stuff. And it was this beautiful, soulful, musical drama. And then you even go to something like Alex Garland's Men, for example, which is this really blown up horror. And she was still able to find kind of subtlety and shade in it. But in this, it's just rah, 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 full blast the whole way through it. And it just gets very tiresome.
Yeah. Could that be a fault of direction?
Definitely.
In the sense that they're not really sure what kind of film they're in and therefore how they're supposed to act.
Yeah, this is it. I think Maggie Gyllenhaal, because this does tend to happen with actor turned directors, is that they're like, well, I'm an actor. I know exactly what to do here. So I want you to find your own instinct and find your own kind of tempo in the scene and just go for it. And we'll just capture it because I'm an actor, but I'm also a director. And I'm going to give this actor the chance to do what they've always wanted to do, how they interpret it. And that's all well and good if, you know, the text is strong enough to kind of withstand that kind of thinking. But this isn't it. Like, the script is just very much cobbled together by loads of references to, like, Young Frankenstein, Bonnie and Clyde, you know, other kind of, like, John Waters at one point, you know, that kind of way. Like, there's just so much going on in it. It's also over the top that, you know, I think any director would find this unwieldy. But the fact that Maggie Gyllenhaal, this is her second film. She did a film previously called The Lost Daughter, which was adapted from an Elena Ferrante book. And that was, again, a lovely, like, very kind of slow, very kind of moody piece, whereas this is just going full tilt straight away. I would say this, though. I mean, I was watching that and I was thinking, it must have been lovely to be on the set because everyone looked like they were having a blast. Like,
yeah.
Like, she got her husband involved, Peter Sarsgaard, Jake Gyllenhaal is in there as well, Penelope Cruz is in there. Everyone seemed to be, you could tell that everyone was enjoying being around each other, but what came out the other side of it was just completely incoherent.
Why do some people like it? Because there are, you were mentioning before, sure.
Yeah, The Guardian gave it 4 out of 5
stars. Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Was that Robbie Cullen?
I don't know.
Or was it Peter Bradshaw?
I don't know.
Okay, sorry.
I was just in The Guardian. I don't know these people personally or anything.
Well, I'm just going to say, but it was Robbie Cullen. He throws out stars like he's a ninja. Like, it's ridiculous. He has no barometer at all.
Yeah, you know the pair who used to review, the American pair, Ebert and...
Oh, yeah, it's just Ebert. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Ebert, I think, still does, and he gave it...
Ebert's dead.
Oh, no, okay, well, then the other one, then.
Peter Bradshaw.
He's also dead.
Okay, well,
it's RogerEbert.com. I'm going to say it. It's RogerEbert.com.
Ah, right, okay, right, but it wasn't him, like.
No,
okay,
no,
well, somebody gave it a good review.
Yeah, no, there are... No,
Peter Bradshaw.
Huh?
Peter Bradshaw.
Peter Bradshaw, was it? That's surprising. No, like, yeah, there have been good reviews. I think some people are being probably more forgiving than I am for the incoherence.
Could they interpret it as just a totally camp, over-the-top rendition of this story?
That's fine. I have no problem with camp. Camp is great when it works, when it makes sense, when there is a kind of a structure to it. This is just pinging all over the place.
Yeah,
it's just there's no semblance of sanity to it. And not even in a good... You can have an insane, over-the-top thing like Ken Russell or something like that, but this doesn't have it at all. It just comes off as messy.
Yeah. Can't wait for Emerald Fennell's reimagination of the story of the Virgin Mary, starring Lily Allen as Mary, Barry Keoghan as Christ, and sure, poor Mescal can play Joseph because he's so caring and sensitive.
He's got He's got them big sad eyes.
He does, yeah. He does, you know. Well, you see, he's in danger of being typecast as Mr. Sadness.
He absolutely is in danger of being typecast. He has been typecast, I would argue.
Where is SpongeBob in Irish being shown? It's advertised as a thing, but I can't find anywhere showing it.
I'm not being funny. I would say a lot of cinemas in Galway would probably have it. Just being honest, like, it's the Goyle talk. Like, you know, they would have it. I would say, like, a good few cinemas do tend to have it, yeah.
Yeah, the BBC gave Bright 4 out of 5 stars, gave Hamnet 2 out of 5 stars.
Oh, la la. Maybe anti-Irish bias is going on there.
Yeah, they want us to fail. It's not just mullets, but 80s moustaches.
Yeah, I had a moustache with them.
At the Pixies in Galway Airport last year, more lads in their 20s with them than you'd expect. And somebody else says, if you look at a map of Belmullet in Mayo, it looks like a mullet. Everyone there has a mullet, even the women and babies.
Is that like the Simpsons where they go?
You'd want to visit there now if that were true. That's like that's a good tourism point.
It's like
now.
Bronson, Missouri. You know, like then the Simpsons would go to Bronson, Missouri, and it's everyone looks like Charles Bronson.
Right. So, love story, the John F. Kennedy, Carolyn Bessette thing.
Yes.
Is it fair to say getting slagged off as being not that good?
No, it's excellent.
Everybody says, yeah. Oh, no, I've read.
Glossy.
I've read very bad reviews of it.
Oh, really?
It's all very nostalgic. The music, nice, but the script is actually pants.
Oh, no.
It's glossy. Like, it's
glossy, and it does 90s amazing.
Yeah, it
You're
does.
Right. So it is nostalgic. But it is, it's very popular. Everyone's watching. Disney have been really smart about it too, because they've released it weekly. So that's why it's still in the zeitgeist, because people are like, oh, okay, we can only watch it once a week, and people are dissecting things. Before it was even released, Jack Schlossberg. Thank you. He criticized it.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, this is real people we're talking about. And so he hadn't even watched it before he criticised it. But I get it. When it's your family, you're going to be very protective of your family. But he was on CBS Sunday Morning and he actually said, I love this, well, if you want to know someone who's never met anyone in my family, knows nothing about us, talk to Ryan Murphy. Mm. He's disgusted at the depiction that he's got out there. It's all fiction. And he has said that if Ryan Murphy really wants to do something, he's worried about the fact that at the moment, given everything that Trump's doing with the Kennedy name, it's probably more important that more fact than fiction be put out there. And he feels that Murphy is actually putting out more fiction, contributing to this. And he said maybe, he actually came out and said, maybe with all the money he's made, maybe he should contribute that to
the Kennedy Center. Yeah.
Oh, no, you wouldn't want to give it now.
It's
the Trump Kennedy Center.
Yeah, or do something to oust Trump. So he's come down really heavy on it. But, you know, of course, the filmmakers have come out and said, you know, we've done this with great respect. And if you watch it, you'll see that there's a tenderness. And there is a tenderness to it. Mm. But I suppose his mother, so I've watched 7 of the 8 available, or 8 of the 9 available, and his mother doesn't come across well in it.
So she's very harsh, doesn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, you see the harsh side of Caroline, and I could see him wanting to defend that.
But it makes sense. I mean, like, Jesus Christ. Like, I mean, that woman, like, she lost her, you know, her father and her brother.
Her daughter recently
as well. Tatiana Schlossberg died as well. Like, you can understand, like, she plays it with a certain toughness. I mean, I have to say, I'm on Jack Schlossberg's side on this, because, like, think about it. Like, the Kennedys are the most eulogized. You know, there is such a sheen around them, and they have been on cinema and TV for so long. I would imagine that's very, very tiresome. And this idea that, you know, they belong to the public and all the rest of it. And, like, you know, Ryan Murphy does have a history of...
It's a shtick.
It's a shtick he has. Yeah. Like, he did it with the O.J. Simpson thing. He did it with Not Armani, Versace.
Yeah. Oh, he's done it with,
the Versace thing. And the Versace family came out and were, like, really against that, because it basically said that he was going to die of AIDS and all the rest of it, and that just because he was shot dead, it was hidden and blah.
Well,
so
this is a new franchise. So that was American
Crime Story.
And this is called Love Story. John F. Kennedy Jr., Carolyn Bessette Kennedy.
Yeah.
So who knows what he's going to do next. So it's interesting to see.
Okay, right. We do have to take a break. More movies and booze and a little bit of money to give away after this. Have a drink and
celebrate their win.
Yeah.
Can I quote a famous, so there's Women in Wine again, Champagne Widows.
Okay.
Right. So there's Madame Clicquot, who invented the riddling tables, which is really important in Champagne. Louise Pommery made a brut style of champagne for the first time in the 19th century. So that's making it dry, a dry style rather than sweet. That would have been around. And Lily Bollinger, here is a quote from her. This is very much shortened. I drink champagne when I'm happy and when I'm sad. Okay, that's abbreviated. So yeah, she ran the Champagne House Bollinger from 1940s to the 70s. And those women heavily involved in wine when the men went off to war and died.
Right.
So they took over. But the red that we are having right now
The first woman you mentioned there, what did she invent? The riddling thing?
Riddling.
What is that?
So basically it turns the bottles. Basically, when the champagne has the yeast in it,
yeah,
they have to take that out to have the second fermentation. It moves the bottles around slowly,
gradually, to riddle
them around.
Yeah. Okay. So
I know.
Yeah. Okay. I thought I asked some difficult questions when you've had a few. Anyway, tell us about our red wine.
Okay. So this is a Rioja.
Yeah.
Rioja, Rioja, whatever you want to call it, is fine. And it is made by Bodegas Amazola de la Mora. Amezola. De la Mora. And it's the Rioja Crianza. So Crianza is the aging, not the quality or anything like that. And this is one of the oldest historic estates in Rioja, founded in the mid 19th century. And they own all their own vineyards, which is kind of unusual in Rioja. Rioja, see what I said there? But this winery was actually taken over by two sisters after their dad passed away.
Mm.
And they were very young. Coming out, they had to go on, get on board. And they were at the time the youngest producers in the whole region. So they kind of got some help from different consultants and that. And they got great praise from a guy called Robert Mondavi, who would have been like the king of wine back in the day. And he said that their wines were outstanding. So we are having one of them. It is a blend of Tempranillo, Mazzola and Graziano. And the grapes are hand-picked, they're fermented in stainless steel to keep the fruit and then aged for 15 months in French and American oak. So it gives you spice and vanilla as well as the kind of, I call Wimbledon fruit here, strawberries and just a gorgeous, like eating mess in a glass. But it's gorgeous with loads of red meat. Think of, you know, Mother's Day next week as well. If you're cooking lamb or beef or something like that, this is a real treat. And I would open this up a little bit more in advance. It comes in a reserve as well, which doesn't necessarily mean it's better quality. It's just more aged and a little bit more complex. And this is widely available. It's in O'Reilly's and Cabinteely, Blackrock Cellar, The Wine Pair in Brassels Street, McEntee's and Kells, Cooper's Bottle Shop, Boutique Wines and Wine Online. And just Boutique Wines, remember last time I was on, I was talking about Valentine's Day and love. So this couple, Avril and Johnny from Boutique Wines, celebrated 25 years in business just this week. And they had the winemaker of this wine over. So I met her and I was chatting to her. And she was just proud as punch being here with the family celebrating. And it's gorgeous, isn't it?
Oh,
it's
really, really nice. Yeah.
So widely available. And Maria Amazola and her sister Christina are fantastic winemakers.
Yeah. So what does Crianza mean?
Crianza is the aging classification. So basically, there's, you know, it's a minimum aging that you have to have 6 months in oak.
Okay.
Minimum 6 months.
Means
in oak.
It's and then it's, so if it's aged reserve, for two, something else.
Yeah. So 2 years right. aging in total. So this is 2019.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's got much more aging. So the big brands you'll find on the shelves are 2023 vintage.
Mm.
They haven't, you know, they just cash cow. They just go in and out, minimum aging completely. And this then, they've spent 15 months aging it in the barrels to make it more complex, softer, soften the tannin, make it smooth. So yeah, so that's what it means. It doesn't mean quality. It means aging classification. But the more, you know, the smaller producers make better quality wines like that.
Yeah.
You know? So
okay.
I'm showing this at a course tomorrow and they're in for a treat.
Right. Yeah. All you happy course people. Right. We'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man. It's in cinemas today and on Netflix a fortnight from today. Here's a clip.
You live in a house haunted with ghosts of people who died because of you. You abandoned your kingdom, and you abandoned your son.
Moody.
Moody, yeah. Is it Is this a movie or is it just a long episode of Peaky Blinders?
Yeah, it's a long episode of Peaky Blinders, if I'm being honest with you.
Right. Does like, it bring the story to an end?
Very
any
much
sort
so.
Of finality? Okay. I think
so.
We can all guess what happens then.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say, like, I mean, Cillian Murphy has originated this role and that really has become this, like, cultural phenomenon. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
And, like, he in this, like, he... You know, he looks, it's actually weird. He looks exactly like Samuel Beckett. Like, if they're ever going to do a, no, seriously, with the glasses and with the hair and, like, even what he's wearing, like, he looks exactly like Samuel Beckett. But he's very much kind of, I would say, it's kind of like Batman. He turns up and everyone's like, oh my God, it's him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that kind of takes a little bit of the colour out of it, if you like. Barry Keoghan is very good. Like, he's got that Birmingham accent down.
Well, that was news to me as well. Yeah, I've been calling him Keoghan the whole time.
Right.
Yeah.
He has the Birmingham accent down very, very well. Tim Roth is in there as well. The whole story is set in 1940. Tim Roth plays this criminal who has been hired by the Nazis to flood the UK with counterfeit money so that they can crash the economy and invade England a lot quicker. And how they're going to do that is by dispersing this money through criminal syndicates. They arrive in Birmingham and are planning to recruit Barry Keoghan to do all this. But then he, you know, Cillian Murphy's character, Tommy Shelby, has to return and talk him out of it. Two of them have an argy-bargy and then decide, no, we're going to team up and kill the Nazis.
And he's the son.
He's his son, isn't it? Yeah. Barry Keoghan and Cillian Murphy. I'm getting it. Their father and son in this.
Yeah.
And Barry Keoghan's character is called Duke and he's taken over the Peaky Blinders because Tommy Shelby has withdrawn from life and he's like living in a self-imposed exile. I enjoyed this for what it is, which is essentially like a feature-length episode. This is very much them trying to draw a line under the series. I would say it is left open if they want to make another season of Peaky Blinders. But having said that, I do think they have wrung every possible iteration of Peaky Blinders out of it. Like, I mean, you had like Tom Hardy in there. You had Adrian Brody in there. I mean, they've really tried to get as much as they can out. Until the end of the last season, it was like, he was like a comic book hero. You know, that kind of way. Like,
he
couldn't seem to have... you know, anything happened to him, he was impervious. And I think maybe that's where the title came from. I don't know. I mean, in the thing, he's writing a book about his life and everything else. I think, look, if you're a diehard Peaky Blinders fan, you're going to enjoy this. I think if you have a passing interest in it, maybe wait until it's on Netflix. It's fine. It's fine. It was enjoyable enough. Like, it's good to see kind of Cillian Murphy having a bit of crack and, you know, kind of, you know, but he plays it like an action hero, you know, that sort of way. Like, he plays it really like an action hero, which is interesting to see. Soundtrack is great as well. Fontaines DC, Green Chatton, Emil and the Sniffers did songs for it. So, like, it's very much kind of, it is unfortunately style over substance, but it's still good.
Yeah.
Fun. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Do we need a Game of Thrones movie, Serena?
I didn't think we needed the series, but I'm one of you who think that.
You would like a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, I'm telling you.
Well, sell it to me, Brian.
Right.
Because...
basically, it is...
Don't, because we're going to have to go soon.
Okay. So, I'm just going to quickly say, basically, the screenwriter, Bo Willimon, who is behind House of Cards, he also wrote Mary, Queen of Scots, and he's done a few episodes of Andor.
Yeah, he's a brilliant writer.
He said he's got a script written. Warner Brothers haven't confirmed it. What we do know is that the script that has been submitted, they've said it's going to, I don't even know if I'm saying this properly, it's going to center on Aegon and Targaryen.
His
conquest of Westeros. None of the original cast of Game of Thrones are going to be in this, but can I?
Yeah, what's the point?
No,
really.
The point, but one quick point. We're done.
No, I'm sorry, we're done.
We're done.
We have to go.
Okay.
Thank you all very much.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.